This year, the American Ballet Theatre has devoted its fall season to the centennial celebration of Antony Tudor, one of the finest dancers and choreographers of the 20th century. On October 31st, the ABT will present six of Tudor's greatest works in one evening. And joining me now is Kevin McKenzie, the artistic director of the American Ballet Theatre. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
It's been said that Antony Tudor revealed the human psyche through his work. How does that work in something as abstract as dance?
Well, you know, I think that Tudor was far more a theater person in a funny way than a dance person. He studied dance with the objective of becoming a choreographer, not of becoming a dancer.
But wasn't that also the tradition in England where he grew up? In fact, later I'll be speaking to Christopher Wheeldon, who felt frustrated when he came to the United States and couldn't choreograph initially, because we usually assume that that only occurs after you've retired.
Yes, exactly. And I do think that that was part of his culture. But I think that where he made his mark is that he came at a period in time in ballet's history where he recognized that the art form needed to evolve and needed to change. And one of the things that freed him up is that he decided he was going to hold a mirror up to society rather than make an allegory. He was going to tell real tales involving real people.
He came along at the right time, because he and Balanchine, between them, pretty much transformed ballet and made it
in very different directions. Yeah, you know,
but around the same time.
Around the same time, Balanchine brought ballet into the 20th century, and he to a large degree abstractized it. Tudor went the other direction. He used the vocabulary of ballet and translated it into body language that allowed one, through choreography — it was definite gestures. He really studied, you know, the intensity of a gesture to tell not a tale but a specific thought.
And you say he was committed to doing away with what you call decorative excess that had no dramatic value. So he was promoting simplicity in the work?
Absolutely. You know, it's like...
It wasn't that show-offy stuff that ballet had featured in the past.
Exactly. You know, there's sort of undirected passion can be exciting to watch, but it's not very specific. And he was very, very adamant about being very specific about where you place your energy and where you place all that passion and emotion.
He's... better remembered for his one-act works rather than longer pieces. Is that because he wanted that kind of simplicity? It's harder to sustain that over a longer work?
Well, yeah, I think so, because inevitably with an evening-long work, even the best of them have to fall to a certain degree upon a divertissement of dances that will further tell the story. But the storyline in and of itself will stop while those dances happen. With Tudor's work, he everything that was choreographed was furthering the story, and it was remarkable in the theater how long he can develop a phrase and then smack you and surprise you at the end of that phrase with where it has been heading, very much in the sense of a theater director.
Well, it's always struck me that one of the problems with sustaining a dance piece is that its length is determined by the length of the music it's being danced to.
That's true.
And I've seen things where I thought, gee, this is brilliant, and oh, wait, this is going on too long. He's running out of ideas.
Yeah,
the dancers are getting tired.
Yeah, but, you know, I have never witnessed that with any of Tudor's work. He was brilliant in his choice of music. Somehow he was able, in the conceiving stages of all of his works, to delineate the score into the scenes of a story very rarely have I witnessed an audience squirming in their seats, wondering when it was going to end.
My guest is Kevin McKenzie, the artistic director of the American Ballet Theater. How are you celebrating his life? Is it just a matter of dancing some of his more famous pieces?
No, we've decided, you know, the time has come for not only the public to have another look at a person who really put the stamp on ballet theater, on those two words. He was one of our founding fathers. He was somebody who changed the face of ballet, and we call him our artistic conscience. And so therefore what we are doing is designing a season that you feel his influence as a choreographer throughout every single night within the season, in some way, shape, or form, either one of his ballets or the influence that he's had on a choreographer is represented. But on the 31st, we're doing an actual evening-long tribute, an hour-and-a-half-long segment with film and some excerpts of his work, but mostly full works that sort of paint the picture of the creative periods in which he worked.
Looking over his life, he seems like a rather surprising person to have done all of this. Born very poor, described as Cockney. I guess at that time Cockney was still something you could describe somebody as, with a different name, William Cook. So yeah. Is he somebody who was totally self-created?
I believe so. He was all full of contradictions. He came to us in a blaze of glory, if you will, with these wonderful masterpieces that he had created in London in the 30s, and then he added works like Pillar of Fire and his Romeo and Juliet to the rep of American Ballet Theater, and literally took ABT by storm, took New York by storm, and therefore the country by storm.
But hadn't he become a dancer accidentally?
No, I think he became a dancer with a very specific... I think somehow he knew that he was going to be creating works. I think dance was a means to an end for him.
Well, he first began dancing with Dame Marie Rambert, who's credited with revolutionizing English ballet.
That's right.
He was
a jack of all trades. He went there and he played the piano for them, and he painted sets, and he choreographed, and he danced, and it gave him a platform to create, and he was going to do anything he needed to do in order to create.
And you say that he began choreographing rather young. Do we know anything about those early pieces?
Well, there are some pieces that are lost to us. Some are in a state of being put back together, things like Gustav Holst's The Planets. He did every one of them. Two of them have been reconstructed. But they were very much experimental works that informed the works that really have lasted and resonate with the public. His first real masterpiece was Lilac Garden, Jardin aux Lilas. And I think much of those early works were explorations that resulted in that.
And he was one of the founders of the London Ballet. So how did he wind up dancing and choreographing for the American Ballet Theater?
Agnes DeMille, the iconic choreographer and writer. And
once a guest on this show many years ago.
Yeah, remarkable woman. She was studying in London with Marie Rambert and came into contact with Tudor. And he recognized a great performer when he saw it, and he actually created a work on her, Dark Elegies, which was his next masterpiece, and also Judgment of Paris. And Agnes recognized the enormity of his talent, and when she came back from London, she went to Lucia Chase, who was about to start American Ballet Theatre in the late 30s, and she told him, "You need to bring this guy. He is going to changed the face of dance in this century." And luckily, Lucia followed Agnes's advice.
And you said the groundwork of what Tudor did in the 1940s and beyond is still the identity of what the ABT stands for.
Absolutely. At that time, it was a fledgling company, ABT, but in the first 10 years of its existence, his works informed a certain genre of dance that had not ever been put out there before. It was real people, people who wore clothes just like the people in the audience did. They weren't fairies. You didn't have to suspend your belief. No one was dead and resurrected. It was working class people dealing with working class problems.
And is that something that resonated with American audiences? Because ballet had not, I guess it was the sort of thing that we got from visiting companies, and then suddenly here we have Tudor with the ABT and Balanchine with the New York City Ballet, and
it just broke
New York
all
becoming
expectations.
The center of ballet.
Yeah, absolutely, and he broke all expectations. Again, I really believe that those two words, the original title of ballet theater, are largely he shaped what those two words mean. They were equally important.
How long did he keep on dancing?
He danced through the 40s and performed, I think, as late as in the early 50s. But he really shifted his focus to developing dancers once he settled in on Nora Kay. He did dance occasionally, but really he threw his attention to creating.
And teaching.
And teaching. He did at the end of the 40s, into the early 50s, he stopped creating. He actually had a very big failure, and it threw him. And the critics turned on him. And he decided, I guess, that he needed a sabbatical, and he put his attention to teaching. He was one of the charter teachers at Juilliard in the dance division there, and really honed his message about how to translate what this art form can be and can convey to young dancers. He did direct a couple of ballet companies, the Royal Swedish, where he did again choreograph something in the 50s, which was an enormously powerful statement on war and man's cruelty to other men, called Echoing of Trumpets. And then he came back to New York and briefly directed the Metropolitan Opera Ballet before he came back to the ABT in the 70s.
But he didn't go back to England, interestingly.
No, I think he recognized that ballet theater had shaped his view of the world. And it was interesting. He came back after the 70s. He hadn't created a major work in over 25 years. And at the age of, I think he was about 70, early 70s, when he created Leaves Are Fading. And it's this unbelievable pastoral of an ode to the relationship, a lifelong relationship. And it was really sort of the first abstract work he'd done.
You've announced that the centerpiece of the celebration is the pas de deux from Romeo and Juliet, which he choreographed and danced in 43. It's interesting to see what happens when somebody choreographs for himself.
Yes.
That's a piece that's rarely performed. Why?
Well, it's a number one, it's a very delicate piece, but he retired it. It got retired somewhere in the 50s. I think because it was rather expensive to tour. It has an elaborate set. And
and you're only doing the pas de deux. Would it be difficult to do the complete
It would
ballet?
Be very difficult still to do the full piece, but not impossible. Really, as a matter of fact, when I was first appointed artistic director of APT in 92, one of my first projects was to put a Shakespeare evening together of Ashton's The Dream along with Tudor's Romeo. And frankly, finances got in the way. It would be a very expensive thing to reconstruct, and that was not the time to push that. But it's also, you know, there's logistics that get in the way, which is unfortunate. Commerce does versus art in this situation. But it is a gem, and it deserves to be reconstructed at some point.
And the music is by Delius.
Delius.
He seemed to have a real affection for Delius.
Yeah. Yeah, it creates this very quiet look at a like a Botticelli painting that has taken a deep breath and come to life. It's a remarkable study of the tale.
Well, I'm sure you as a dancer have thought often about why a choreographer relates to a certain composer and not another composer, when the other composer might be just as good.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's interesting. You know, if you take Romeo as an example, we as a public automatically go to the big sweeping score of Prokofiev. You know, it's full of passion. And Tudor was a very, on the one hand, he endorsed and demanded all this emotionality in his works. As a person, he got into Zen Buddhism, which sort of denies all that he promoted. He was very contradictory contradictory is not the right word. Contrary. He was very contrary. And I think his attachment to the Delius was really soul felt and not really trying to make a statement against anything else. It just spoke to him.
The American Ballet Theater's centennial celebration of Tudor will be at the New York City Center from the 21st of this month to November 2nd. Do you take it to other places after that?
Unfortunately, we will not during the rest of this year.
The New York City Center has to be one of the greatest venues for dance. Dancers seem to love it. Why
it's
is that?
It's great. Well, you know, because it's...
Other than that, it's a gorgeous building?
It's a very intimate connect with the audience. There are a lot of great theaters in New York, but City Center does provide a sort of very up-close and personal... That fourth wall as performers is very thin.
Mm-hmm. Even though it's a large theater.
Yeah.
Well, I want to thank you so much for being with us today. I've been talking with Kevin McKenzie, who is the artistic director of the American Ballet Theater, one of the greatest dance companies in the world. If you want more information about tickets and the various programs, you can go to our show page at wnyc.org. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you for having us.
And here's some Delius.